You're listening to the Script Lab Podcast. I'm Shani Edwards. The new Netflix film, Let It Snow, is a fun, diverse, and heartfelt comedy about a group of teenagers dealing with Christmas during a snowstorm. The screenplay is by Victoria Strauss, who's best known for 2016's Finding Dory. The screenplay was inspired by the book Let It Snow, Three Holiday Romances, written by YA authors Maureen Johnson, Lauren Miracle, and John Green. You may know the incredible 2014 film The Fault in Our Stars that's based on John Green's novel of the same name. Today I speak with all three authors about what you need to know if you want to write young adult fiction and how John Green's book Looking for Alaska was purchased by Paramount years ago and how it finally made it to Hulu as an 8-episode show. Take a listen. So, hi.
Hi.
Maureen, Lauren, and John.
Hi.
So I loved this movie, Let It Snow. It was so much fun. I love how the movies around the holidays just always want to make you feel good. Mm. And the characters were so diverse, and I love the song. What is the song called?
Do you mean the one at the very end?
The Crescent of the Moon. Yeah.
I had to go find that one. I loved it too. I have it on Spotify now.
Yeah.
And I don't know who it is, but it's great.
It's great. I was singing it.
Me too.
Yeah, it's a British band from the 80s, but it is a beautiful song.
Yeah. All the music is amazing.
That was such a warm... Yeah, it's full of those warm, lovely moments.
And Luke, the director, loves music. And we heard that he was very instrumental in making sure that the music fit the movie.
The music's good.
Yeah, it's really good.
So, Maureen, this started from a book called Let It Snow, Three Holiday Romances. How did you... So each of you wrote a short story, and they got put together in a book. How did that happen?
Well, that's kind of the other way around, is that the idea was that we were going to do a book together. And originally, it was going to be three disconnected stories. And the three of us decided to make a kind of continuing narrative that had...
We want to up this game.
Yeah.
So then the other characters would appear in little ways in the stories, and there'd be little moments of intertwining, and also by making them kind of chronological.
Mm-hmm. Same setting, mm-hmm. same, so that we took positions and dates. So I got the first position and certain dates, and then John got the second position, and Lauren the third. So we arced it out over what happens in this town over these couple of days.
And how did you come together? Were you friends?
Yeah,
we were.
You guys were, and still are, super tight friends, and I've always thought you guys were awesome, but I didn't have the same level of friendship, but...
Well, we lived in New York
together. Maureen and I were living in New York at the time, and we were...
Not together, but...
Right, you know, not in the same apartment, but in the same city.
In a kind of sitcom-y apartment.
But we did write together most days. Mm-hmm. So a lot of days, I would take the train downtown, and... Maureen and our friend Emily and I would find a cafe somewhere to write. And we knew Lauren. We really liked Lauren's
work. We all kind of started writing young adult fiction at the same time. Mm-hmm. So we all knew each other's work. And it was exciting. You know?
YA is a fairly tight community.
And writing can be lonely. So the chance to get to write with two other authors was like, yes, please.
So how did it become a movie?
My magic. Winter magic. Christmas magic. It's been in the running for, 5 years now?
Yeah.
Is that possible?
Wow. Since 2013, 2014. It was a long and winding road, as these things often are. But, you know, the producers were super supportive from the very beginning and always really focused on, you know, getting to a point where... You know, they had a script that they were really proud of, and when we read that version of the script, we were all so excited. We were texting back and forth like, "This is so great!"
Yeah, it came in at around 11:30 at night, and I read it at night. And I think you two may have.
Well, first, so I remember we got a text from you, and you were like, "You guys, this is good."
This is really good.
And you started reading, and you're like, "Wow, this is." Actually really good. And then I read it and I was like, oh my god, this is phenomenal.
Once we read that, we just were really hoping it would happen, and obviously this stuff is way out of author's control, but they built a wonderful team around it. They put together an amazing cast. Luke's such a wonderful director.
Well, and also we had Dylan Clark and Alexa Fakin, who from the beginning were just such supportive forces, you know? They never gave up on it. And there was a lot of chances to give up.
And they did ask for our input, and they, I think, like, we definitely listened when we had different thoughts about things. So it was a very positive experience.
So what's it like to see your work in a script with changes that you didn't make? It started in your head, but then it changed. What's it like?
You know, I've always, obviously people talk about books and movies being different, and as writers, we're kind of warned, oh, don't expect it. It's so much better than the book. I love the book, but it's grown and changed because the world has grown and changed, and it made I just got teary watching it.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I felt just really excited. I mean, sometimes you read changes that you don't think work, or that, you know, go against something that was important to you that you were trying to do, and that can be a little disheartening. I never had that experience with Let It Snow. I always felt like the script just got better and better, and
they're kind, and these kids are smart, and they treat each other well, and they're funny, and I love it.
But I was a dramaturg. My specialty was adaptation. Mm. And, you know, my job was to be the person who took things apart for parts. Your job is, you're trying to tell a story, and you're using different formats. And when actors have to get up and the job of scenery, of actor, of director, of either on a stage or on film, you know, is so different. As authors, we get control of all elements. We take your hand and we guide you through every single aspect. And our job is, when you're writing, is the dialogue only does so much, or the directions only do so much, and then there's so many other people involved. So no,
and I'm seeing about this too after watching it, is that in the film you get to go from story to story to story to story, back and forth and back and forth, whereas in the novel or in the book, it's first you read Maureen's, then you read John's, then you read Lauren's, and so that gives it more of an active, dynamic feel as well.
Right.
So all of you are successful YA novelists. Congratulations, that's a big deal. I think a lot of people, myself included, think like, oh, I think I'm gonna sit down and write a YA novel. And the laughs are starting. And I realized very quickly that it's really hard. Why is it so hard?
Tell us when you find out. It's always hard.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it's been 4 years since I published a book and 6 years since I published the one before that.
Was it 4 years?
Yeah. No. Two. Sorry. Yeah, I forgot about Turtles All the Way Down.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's been a while. It's hard. Writing is always hard. And I remember talking to picture book writers who, you know, are adjacent to our world. And I think writing picture books is hard. I think there's no right, you know.
Writing is hard.
Whatever audience you're writing for, writing something that will really mean something to that audience is difficult. You've got to try to both imagine your story and imagine the way that you can tell it so that it will resonate with the readers you want to have. And both of those are hard. Doing them together is super hard.
And aside from all that, creative part of it is just the, I've often thought that there would be a relief to have a job where I'm supposed to show up at a certain time and I get to leave at a certain time, and somebody says, do this and this and this, and then I would do it, because otherwise it's me saying, Lauren, you got to sit down and do that thing, you know, and you can't wait for inspiration or you'll never get anything done. You got to do it anyway.
Right. I think that is the most important writing advice I ever received, is that writers write.
Yeah.
And you have to find a couple hours, 3 hours a day, 2 hours, whatever it is for you, 45 minutes for some people. It doesn't have to be every day, but you do have to write.
Sit down and commit. And then, and most times something does happen and that space in your brain opens up and words start coming. It's not magical or mystical, but, you know.
It's a behavior.
Yeah, it's a behavior. It's a learned habit.
Yeah.
So when writing for, say, teens, young adults, do you have any advice on what people should keep in mind when they are writing for that demographic?
I think it's really important not to write down to teenagers and not to try to imagine teenagers from that adult perspective, because the way they experience themselves is very different from the way that we experience teenagers, you know? And the conversations that they have with each other even are very different from the conversations they have with us. And so we, by by observing them from our adult perspective, I don't think we're ever going to, you know, hear them as they hear themselves. And so I think it's important to not try to write down to them, but instead to try to credit them insofar as possible with, you know, the full range of humanity.
Yeah, we're not trying to be teenagers.
No.
Yeah, you know, we're not trying to say, give any illusion that we are. We're telling stories for an audience, and anybody can read a YA novel. It's for everybody. But I think things get classified as YA because it's about a certain age, and usually it often involves firsts. That's, I think, usually mm-hmm. the biggest kind of band of...
Yeah, and also maybe, too, the lack of wisdom that comes with time, which yes. is great. I mean, you can't, you know, you're young, and therefore you're young, and it's not your fault that you're young, but everything's going to come across differently.
Right. I think that's very true. The YA novels tend not to have that narrative distance mm-hmm. where it's not usually like an adult looking back on childhood, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. that Stephen King story that they made Stand By Me from, yes, although I love that. I love that story so much.
Or like To Kill a Mockingbird.
Or To Kill a Mockingbird. Yeah. Wonderful work. Or Sua. Or, you know, there's lots, The Plot Against America. There's so many books about, you know, adults looking back on childhood. And that's its own wonderful genre. But with young adult novels, it tends to be, there's not a lot of narrative distance. There's not a lot of distance between the story and the telling of it.
And I'd like to hear what y'all think about this. I have a difference of opinion with some of my other writer friends. I also try very hard not to write for the adults who are going to be reading the young adult books. Sure, they can read them, but I'm not writing them for those adults. And I'm not writing them to think, oh dear, what if they don't like that? I don't care about that part. I want the kids to...
I don't think I have a sophisticated enough sense of audience.
Oh, good.
Like, I have no idea who I'm writing for. my terrified 16-year-old self, probably.
So. Yeah.
I don't have that either. I'm very, like, I wrote a book. Do you want to read it? But I do know a lot of authors that have a very clear sense of what their audience is like. And so there's different flavors of us.
I think that's so important. There are as many ways to write books as there are books.
So I liked what you said, Maureen, about it's about firsts. So you mean like first kiss, first love?
First a lot of everything.
First grief, first time asking the big questions about suffering and meaning independent from your parents. First time...
Being on your own sometimes. Leaving home.
A lot of times first time...
Driving a car. Yeah. You know, like having a job.
Drinking. Working.
First time realizing that your parents can't actually read your mind even though they've been telling you they can your whole life.
I just had that revelation with my six-year-old.
Yeah.
That I have a joke with her that if we touch foreheads, I know what she's thinking. And she's scared that it's true.
Yes. Yeah. Jamie, same. I had to finally say, baby doll, guess what? Your thoughts are your own.
I just told her that. I was like, I'm so sorry. I didn't. I thought this was a bit, Alice. I thought this was a joke that we had. I didn't think.
No, see, I thought it was a clever parenting ploy.
Oh, no.
And it was until it turned dangerous.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
So, John, I have to tell you that I both read and saw the film for The Fault in Our Stars. Mm-hmm. It wrecked me.
Yeah, the movie was very sad.
Oh, God. And I'm kind of a cynical bitch. So
yeah.
I was really, really moved by that story. So, well done. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about Looking for Alaska.
Yeah.
I read that that's your first novel, correct?
Yeah.
And it was set up at Paramount to be a film?
It was.
Can you tell me a little bit about that? Because now it's a show on Hulu.
Yeah, with Paramount TV. So they are still involved. But yeah, when we, and I say we, not to refer to myself in the plural, but to refer to my my spouse and me who made this decision. When Sarah and I decided to sell the rights back in 2005, we sold them and there was no reversion clause. So Paramount was going to own those rights forever. And they did. They tried to make a movie a lot of times. There was a lot of heartbreak along the way. There were a few times that were just really just heartbreaking because we really thought it was going to happen. And we were really pleased with the way that it had been set up and the people who it had been set up with. But eventually, Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage, who had the rights originally or who were attached to it originally all those years ago, called me and they said, what if we did it as like an 8-episode limited series? And I loved that idea because it was going to give the story more space. It was going to allow them to tell backstories of characters that aren't in the book. It was going to allow them to kind of expand the world. And Hulu was a great partner for that. And so we were able to do it kind of miraculously with all of the same people from 14 years ago. And I think that's what made it so special for all of us, is because we all knew the journey that we'd been on to get to that moment. And I'm so glad that it turned out the way it did.
Can I brag for John since he did, so he doesn't have to? Have you seen it yet, Shani? Not yet? That's okay if you haven't.
Not the Alaska one.
It's really so good.
Good. It's perfect. I mean, the kids are amazing, and they're real, and they're smart, and they take care of each other, and the boys hug, and the girls.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's really funny.
My husband and I were just bawling at the end of it. Oh my gosh, it was amazing.
Yeah, I really think that it found its right form and its right time. But the funny thing is, like, when it happened, there was no such thing as, there wasn't just not such a thing as a Hulu limited series. There wasn't such a thing as like a Hulu series. Like Hulu was sort of like YouTube, but you know, in 2005.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just the world has changed so much in the intervening 14 years.
I'm curious about the clause that it doesn't reverse back. So the rights, for my listeners who don't understand, that means they own the rights no matter what.
Right. So usually, like, when Lauren and Maureen and I, for instance, sold the rights to Let It Snow, it was an option for, like, 18 months or whatever. And that's a common deal. This was not a common deal.
And then they can renew it if they choose to, and if they give us a little bit more money, you know, like a penny.
Right. This was that's common. Mm-hmm. This wasn't as common, but the upfront money was, you know, it allowed Sarah to go to graduate school and made our lives possible. So no regrets. And everything worked out really well, and I'm super happy with the show, and super happy with I love this Netflix movie too. It's really rare actually that you have experiences as positive. We all have friends who've had less positive experiences.
And it's still exciting. They're still thrilled, but it's more fun when you love it.
Yeah,
absolutely. Now, have any of you decided to try screenwriting?
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Have you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
it's so much fun.
I tried once and it was so bad. Oh, God. I mean, my screenplay was so, so bad.
See, I think you're hard on yourself, and I think I have an extremely high opinion of myself, so I just think I'm great. Well,
I can see why it might be hard for you.
Yeah.
Because of the way you write.
Yeah, I don't have, like...
You have a lot of internal...
And Maureen and Lauren are both really structurally strong writers. You know, I think because of the way that you were trained, you put together stories and break them apart just with like a level of sophistication that I have no idea how you do it. And I feel the same way about you.
I'm horrible about structure, but I love dialogue.
Yeah.
And then I started writing these scripts for DC Comics, and that taught me how to do the... Mm. They're like, oh, I have to make the people move around. And they're like, okay, I can do this. Mm-hmm. They can move and they can talk.
So you've written scripts for DC Comics?
Graphic novels.
Novels. Great. Yeah.
And is that closer to screenwriting than novel writing? I've never tried that.
Oh, yeah, totally. They call it a script, and it's totally that template and that form, and it's like a sonnet in that you have a specific number of pages, and yeah, it's cool.
That's great.
I have a hard time believing that your script is no good.
Oh, you should read it. It's a real stinker.
Maureen
believes me.
No. I believe that your process might run up against how scripts are written.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. Maureen has been with me when I was writing many stories, and like, you know, I always have like a crazy ending. Like the ending of The Fault in Our Stars was this girl getting tied to the train tracks by the novelist but she loves. It doesn't make any sense at all. It's completely ludicrous.
No, it kind of does, but I'm glad you didn't do that.
When I was writing it, it made total sense in my head.
It's the voice stuff. It's not. I don't think it's the structure. I think it's your voice.
Yeah. So anyway,
a John book sounds like a John book.
Totally. Yeah. There's no getting around that.
No.
Whereas your books, like you
sound like old generic, all generic old shit.
And you're spooky. I don't know if you know it, but she writes spooky.
Oh, Maureen's got a spooky. She's got some spooky stuff inside of her.
I'm from Philadelphia.
She's got some weird ghost.
Natural.
Some ghost stuff that's truly scary.
Is it?
Yes.
I don't think so. When you don't believe in ghosts, it's not scary.
I find
spooky scary.
I find that book legitimately frightening.
Cool. make people on edge.
Since we're talking about Let Us Know.
Right.
that.
The spookiest of them all.
How are each of you going to spend your holiday this year?
Oh, I like that question. I have 5 kids and a husband and lots of animals, and we'll hunker down in Colorado and it'll snow outside and we'll have hot chocolate and marshmallows. Oh, and the Saran ball. Do y'all know the Saran ball?
No.
Okay, what? New trick for all of you. So the parents have to do this. You get a lot of Saran and then you start with one tiny thing like a puff of hair from Randy's navel. That's what we usually start with. Wrap it in Saran, and then you add a dollar bill and wrap it again, and then you add a dog treat and you wrap it again, and then you add this microphone and you wrap it. It gets huge by the end.
This is a katamari.
It's amazing. It's what?
That's a katamari is what you're describing.
What's a katamari?
From Katamari Domacy, the video game where you roll over stuff and it all sticks and you make a big ball and by the end you're
unrolling
it.
So we created
then
it the night before.
It.
And then on Christmas Day, we roll dye. Yeah, you do this whole thing and then so I unroll it and I'm like, ooh, I got the cat poop again. And then Maureen unrolls it and she said, I'll take that cat poop, but you can have the $20. And then you keep on, it lasts for hours.
It's like a gift exchange, but with a weird
but
Saran
wrap. Exciting.
Route. Okay. That
it's
sounds good.
Great. Yeah, that's what I'll be doing.
Thank you. And do you have a pig?
You have a pig?
A pig. You're wearing a pig shirt.
And there is a pig in your story.
And there's a pig in the story. And you said you had lots of animals, but
I don't
no
have
pigs.
A pig.
Okay.
Pigs are great.
Nope.
What about you, Maureen? What are you doing
for the
holidays?
I'll put one in the Saran ball this time.
What are you doing for the holidays?
Normal stuff. My story involves a family that's obsessed with Christmas decorations, and that comes from a very real place. My mother has a Christmas village that she can't even put all of it up anymore, but it used to take 3 weeks to assemble. And we also have the commemorative blanket that shows all the houses and the years they were released. And at one point, she even had these soundtracks that you could play in the background. That was like the sound of clip-clops. And we go all in for Christmas.
Wow.
And my husband's English, so we try to get to England as well.
For Father Christmas.
Yeah, we kind of try to get to England. And then, so we have a little, sometimes we fly on Christmas Eve or...
Sorry.
John just reset.
Amateur hour.
Do you have figgy pudding?
Do you have figgy pudding? Is that real? Is
no,
that a real English thing?
No.
Okay.
Though we have there's Christmas pudding, which is
then
the...
give me the figgy pudding.
Maybe they're thinking of the Christmas pudding, but the Christmas pudding is that cake with
the
super
hard.
I know, but I think they're referring to perhaps just Christmas pudding, which is basically a very hard fruit cake with a rock solid icing.
Sounds horrible.
There's no, he doesn't like, I like to ask him questions about being English. I'm like, hi.
Oh, I bet he loves that.
Oh, living with me is a real dream come true for him.
I bet.
It's a real delight.
I will be with my in-laws in Alabama. So that will be fun. And our kids will be down there and it'll be great. It won't be a white Christmas, but it'll be lovely.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I wish you the absolute best with Let It Snow.
Thank you.
And I hope everybody watches it on Netflix.
This year better.
It's mandatory.
This holiday. What else do you guys have in the works?
Oh, golly. Lots of stuff. For me, it's a book called This Boy, which comes out next spring, about a kid's struggle with addiction.
Mm.
Very
Christmassy.
No, it's appropriate for our time, though.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Very timely.
And I have way too much close experience with it. But,
I do, too.
Okay. I'll give you a copy.
That'd be great.
Okay.
Thank you.
What about you, Maureen?
I have a book coming out in January that's called The Hand on the Wall. That is the third part of a trilogy, a mystery trilogy. I've wanted to write a straight-up classic detective story. So, this is the third part of it. You shouldn't write mysteries in threes, but I did.
I'm really excited.
Are you?
I want to know how it ends.
I've tied it. It was like doing a word problem for 4 years.
I can only imagine. That's why I don't write sequels.
Why can't you write mystery in threes? Just because
that violates the rules of mysteries. You should get a solve inside of one book. And I knew that going in, but so I'm a great believer in the rules. I was a kid that basically just wanted to be a private detective. You know, like I just.
But there are solves within each book. It's just that there's a big solve that I've been waiting for years.
I brought it all
together:
the past mystery, the present
mystery. Oh, this is gonna. I cannot wait.
Nice. Thank you for your enthusiasm.
I'm seriously excited.
I'm sending you 50 copies.
I can't wait.
All right, John, what about you?
I am writing. I write a podcast, actually, with WNYC called The Anthropocene Reviewed, where I, every month, review different facets of the human-centered planet on a 5-star scale. And that takes up all my time and brings me a lot of joy. So that's what I'm working on.
Great. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That was really fun.